Hello and welcome back to another episode of Adventures Through Asian Cinema, where your hosts Ben and Jack go through films from different Eastern countries. I believe, Ben, this is the first documentary that we're covering on the podcast, and it's Katsuo Hara's 1987 film, The Emperor's Naked Army Marches On. Oh boy. Ben, why did you choose this film, and what is this film?
So, I originally chose this film as some way that we could close off Japanuary, but as we know, life things happen. So we're a little
schedules,
bit removed from
all that.
Removed from Japanuary now. But ultimately, the real reason I chose this is because it felt like one of my biggest blind spots in Japanese cinema, and I know that you're a big documentary fan. You love what can be done within that genre of film.
Exactly.
And I do too, although I'm definitely, I'm less in tune with a lot of documentaries.
Sure.
So to finally watch this, you know, it was well worth the wait. It was phenomenal, but we have a lot to unpack here. And
is a lot.
and so to get into what The Emperor's Naked Army Marches On is all about, the film's central figure is Kenzo Okuzaki, who is a 62-year-old World War II veteran who was a part of Japan's invasion of New Guinea. And the New Guinea campaign ultimately ended with a staggering amount of deaths and losses for the Japanese Empire, with more Japanese lives ending due to starvation and disease than combat. And so director Kazuo Hara follows Kenzo Okuzaki with what I would say is a relatively dispassionate and unobtrusive lens. As Okuzaki tries to console the souls of the dead. And he does this through an obsessive pursuit of justice in which he is seeking out answers regarding the deaths of two soldiers from his old unit. And so that this pursuit of justice, this seeking out of answers about what happened to these two soldiers, is really like the main thrust of the film. And yeah, it is a lot.
It's combative, it's confrontational, it's upsetting, it's reflective, but oh man, is it oh so very heavy as well in its presentation. Well, not necessarily in its presentation. As you said, it's a very naturalistic lens. It is very much just shooting and showing what happens, and the weight of the film comes from, I want to say central performance, but it's not a performance. It's this man's grieving process and his anger and his frustration at the way that the army was treated and the fallout from that.
Right. And I feel like it's important that we kind of give some background to the listeners about Okuzaki. So just doing some research, but also listening to the film, I mean, he talks about a lot of his past. He was essentially one of six survivors from his 1,200 men regiment to survive the retreat to Hollandia during the New Guinea campaign. After being caught by Allied forces, he became a prisoner of war in Australia. After the war, he said he accidentally killed a person in 1956 because the person was a con man and took some of his investment money. He received 10 years in prison for this. Those 10 years were spent in solitary confinement, where his Christian background fused together with what can only be called anti-establishment and anarchist views.
Like radicalists, sort of.
Yeah, and then so he was released in 1966 and began to protest the emperor specifically.
Very much specifically the emperor, yes.
Yeah, and it started off with kind of like painting his car and putting posters up on it. But then by 1969, just a few years later, he attempted to shoot the emperor with pinballs through the use of a slingshot. He missed all of the shots, but he was...
he used a gun, my dude. Come on.
Yeah, so what's wild is he tried to shoot the emperor in that manner, and when he missed all of the shots, I think... the Wikipedia article said something along the lines of he yelled out a fallen comrade's name to like get the gun and shoot, but again, this comrade of his was dead. It was he was from the New Guinea campaign as well. Ultimately, he turned himself in for what he did and was sentenced to 1.5 years in prison, was released, continued to protest the emperor. In 1976, he was protesting by making pornographic cartoons of the emperor.
Yes.
And so this man, he hated the emperor. That's for sure.
Very much, yeah.
And he was willing to go to any lengths necessary to, again, like, pursue this sense of justice, to make the emperor and everyone else involved accept their wrongdoing in the World War II efforts, not just against other people but against their own people. This man is a character, to put it lightly. He is someone that has gone through things that we could never imagine. He's done things we could never imagine, and it makes for a thrilling and haunting documentary. I think that's the best way I can put it.
Yeah, it is a very naturalistic approach. It is just quite staggering and harrowing in just following this man from different interactions with the people responsible for certain acts within that military frame. It's you're watching and you don't really understand how far this man is willing to go, really, to seek answers, seek justification, judgment. He's very combative. He is very interpersonal with it all. He's aggressive. He's quite physical with some of the people that he interacts with as well. Mm-hmm. And director Kazuo Hara is just there to witness it all and capture it all, never to cross the barrier between documentarian and documentary subject. He just shoots it on the wall, like a fly on the wall in these scenarios, even when things are getting quite extreme and violent and hostile. He's always there, camera ready.
Yeah, I mean, there's literally a line towards the end where our central figure says, "Violence is my forte." And you can tell that this rage within him, also probably, you know, the lasting impact of the military within
him. Of the military, 100%. The fallout from World War II. I mean, being the like one of the sole survivors out of your troop of, what was like, 1,000 or something, you are never going to walk away from that the same person. And you can definitely feel the fallout through all of his sort of history post-war, and the attack on the Emperor Showa, and all that anger, all that frustration, all that the lack of closure there. He uses that to propel through this documentary with Hara just basically documenting the journey he takes.
Mm-hmm. And the whole time I was watching this, I mean, I would rank this up there with one of the toughest films I've had to watch, not just documentaries, just in general. It's really tough to watch.
It's uncomfortable, but it's purposely uncomfortable.
Like, yeah, and it reminded me a lot of The Act of Killing, which is, when I first watched it, I appreciated it, but I think my uncomfortable feelings kind of overwhelmed that appreciation. It was a lot for me to process. And so,
it's the
in
same
some
as this,
ways,
really, yeah.
Yeah, and so in some ways, seeing that beforehand, I feel like did kind of help prepare me for this. Not that they're connected, but you have to be prepared to kind of essentially, you're like sitting within the depths of hell when watching a documentary like this. I mean,
yeah, you're dealing with the fallout of some of the worst, like, decisions in humankind, basically.
Yeah,
you know, the ethics and morality of man come into question when you follow a man like this and the people that he's talking to.
And what makes it so, like, some of the toughest parts for me are during the first half of the documentary, where he's with the siblings of the two soldiers that died, who he's trying to get answers about. And he's confronting people with them. And you can tell how much of a toll it's taken on them to not really know what has happened to their family. You know, how did they die? Because important context here is that, if I remember correctly, the two soldiers in question were executed after the war was over. Japan had surrendered, and then a month or so later, these two soldiers were ordered to be executed. And it was... The reasoning was unknown, and that's kind of what he's seeking out. He's trying to figure out who did it, why it happened, and through this pursuit, you are getting a detailed history of what him and other soldiers had to suffer through. Again, we're talking about disease and starvation, but, I mean, they ultimately end up talking about, you know, the decision they had to make for, like, who they would eat. Would you eat a native? Would you eat a white soldier? Would you eat your own
soldier?
And
the I did not see the cannibalism twist, if you can call it that, coming at all, and it just makes the film that much more harrowing for me.
And when just, you see when he, I mean, this is something that he had to see and engage in, the people he's essentially. It's not even interviewing, it is interrogating.
No, it's not. Yeah, it's very much like in broad daylight, in their homes, in their living rooms, while their families surround them.
Yeah, I mean,
basically berating these people he deems responsible.
Yeah, I mean, he is literally showing up unannounced to these people's homes with their families, their children, like, I'm talking like grandkids
little kids
in the home. I mean, he's punching some of these people,
wrestling
getting on top
these
of them.
People to the floor,
and
it's brutal. He's visiting people in like hospital beds, sick and practically dying at death's door, and he chooses that point to, interrogate them.
There's even a point where he's, you know, kicking the crap out of this guy that definitely has like a severe condition. I think he recently had a surgery. He even ends up kicking his wife in that process. And he mentions like, well, if I didn't hurt, he's like, I would have felt bad if I hurt him more than I hurt my wife or something like that. And she is fully on board with what he's doing too. I should point that out. I mean, she is in his corner, but it is just like, you can't believe that you're watching it. And I think even some of the people within it are like, are you just filming this? And I think that our director here, I think this is never like a promotion of the central figure's actions. It is showing, to me, it's unobtrusive in the way that it's showing like the fallout of everything. Like, here's this man that has been completely broken down and ruined by his experience in war, and this is how he lashes out and is trying to find peace and get peace for others that have died before him. And whether you think it's right or wrong is kind of beside the point. It's just like, it's capturing essentially all of the horrors and fallouts of war. It is just, it's shocking. I like, there were parts where my jaw was just, you know, unhinged, it's, couldn't believe what I was seeing.
It's really tough to watch. Really, really tough to watch. It's awkward. It's frazzled. It reminded me at the start, when he's first sort of introducing himself into these homes, like a Michael Moore documentary. Michael Moore is very good at getting inside doors with a camera on and talking to people, making them uncomfortable under pressure to seek closure, basically, for a variety of various topics. But it never results to violence. And that's the difference between Michael Moore, the filmmaker documentarian, versus a documentarian following another person actually investigating this. Because I don't think... the way Hara presents it all is very informative and very informative and very well structured, but it is very much down to our central figure Okazaki's decisions and the repercussions that he's going through here.
I think one of the lasting impacts this film will have on me is not just like the passion and rage and sadness you could see and hear from Kenzo, but also when he is interrogating these other former military officers and whatnot, and like they are talking about the cannibalism or being just, you know, stuck in this area where they know that they're either going to get killed by someone or starve to death, what have you. To see just like the looks within those people's eyes and faces.
It's the personal connection to it. It's the personal fear. It's the personal anger. It's the pain.
Yeah. And I think what's fascinating is that the person who Kenzo sees as the primary antagonist outside of the Emperor.
Yeah.
That person went by the name Koshimizu during their military time. That's maybe the only person that seemed, I would say, they didn't seem to feel as bad about maybe what they had done.
Some of the others sort of succumb to the interrogation, where he pushes back a little. He doesn't really see as much remorse as our friend Okuzaki does in this time.
And the thing is, though, is that I think that Kenzo is kind of seeking out all of these individuals. Obviously, he has the worst impression of them, and understandably so. But what you get from this documentary, because of that like dispassionate lens, like this film isn't, again, I wouldn't say it's like pro Kenzo Okuzaki. It's more like it's just anti-war overall.
I'd say so. Yeah, it's not an endorsement of reactionist violence. It's more of a critique of why this is happening, has to happen in the first place.
Right, and so these people that he's interrogating, you know, at first some of them don't admit what they've done, or they're trying to not
dance
really talk
it.
About it, but you're not ever really under the impression that any of these people are proud of what they've done, look back on it fondly. Like they are also broken down and torn apart by their experience. And I think that's what makes some of the conversations so impactful and just tough to sit through, because here are two people that have suffered in similar but somewhat different ways, and they're at odds with each other when, as we know, like the Emperor, or even things beyond the Emperor, people beyond the Emperor, those are the people, like everyone in this documentary, they were just pawns for something that's bigger and more terrible. You know what I mean?
Well, that's it's always going to be one of the fallouts of war, is there are no winners. There are no winners on either side, let alone in the hierarchy here. And yeah, it just goes to show that no one comes out of this the same. No one comes out of this unscathed.
And so, without really spoiling too much, the documentary ends essentially when Kenzo Okuzaki, I think, goes to New Guinea, and all of the footage is confiscated by the Indonesian government, I believe. Yeah. But essentially, there's still more to Kenzo's story after. And I won't say what happens because it is insane. But let's just say it's connected to that person he sees as kind of the central antagonist, this Koshimizu character. This documentary is not the last time they will hear of each other or interact.
No. There's an epilogue.
And it adds another layer of shock.
I was going to say, it doesn't even round out the narrative here. It furthers the narrative in a way that we won't really ever fully grasp. Especially not on film.
I guess moving away from what happens in the documentary, but maybe just talking about the film in general, one thing that stuck out to me that you won't see immediately if you're just to look on Letterboxd or even necessarily on like Wikipedia or something, but very famous, renowned director Shohei
Imamura
produced this played a big role in this happening.
How the documentarian met the subject, really. It was introduced through Imamura.
And I'm not surprised. I mean, being familiar with some of Imamura's films.
Yes, very politically charged, very angry in some regards.
And during Japanuary this year, I actually watched a like short 45-minute documentary from him where he's essentially traveling to other countries and asking questions about, you know, what Japan did in the war. So he's very much, I mean, you look at him, you look at the people like Oshima and so on. The Japanese New Wave guys, they were very anti-establishment.
Oh, 100%.
And so it's not surprising to see a name like that show up as attached to this documentary. But when it first came up, I was like, holy crap, Shohei Imamura. Like, I had no idea. And so that was kind of an exciting find, so to speak. And I will say, I've watched one other documentary from Kazu Ohara.
Okay,
sometime last year. And it was called Goodbye CP, or Goodbye Cerebral Palsy. Another unobtrusive documentary, or you could say maybe overly obtrusive, but like intrusive. But he was following these people that had cerebral palsy. A lot of them, you know, essentially having disabilities to the point of being unable to walk, struggling with speech and talking. And, you know, he was essentially capturing them in their daily lives as they pursue equality, justice, a voice, for people to care about them. And, you know, they spoke of their struggles kind of in a way similar to the veterans speaking of their struggles here. I mean, they talk about what they have to live with on a day-to-day basis, you know, the way that people look at them, the memories that haunt them, the ways that they've lashed out due to how they've been treated. And again, it was an incredibly difficult film to watch. And I gave that film almost a perfect score. I gave this one a perfect score. Sure. I am very curious to watch more from Kazu Ohara. I'm sure people will take issue with his filmmaking, but
I
think it's kind of vital. It's kind of essential, at least.
Well, that's the thing.
Eyes.
It's the question of how far can you go to combat some of these territories, ethically, morally. How can the documentarian present these in a neutral light that actually gets something done or something to the masses? You know, spreads information about this. Acts as like therapeutic closure for some of the subjects, perhaps some of the viewers, maybe. It's a very distinct approach to documentary filmmaking. As you said, non-obtrusive, very much. There's no narrative put upon the film through the director's lens. It is merely holding up a mirror and reflecting what is already there.
Mm-hmm. So Jack, as someone that is very familiar with documentaries, fond of documentaries, you know, if I were looking for documentaries to watch, you're one of the people I would go to for recommendations.
Okay.
So, like, what do you think this film's, like, lasting influence on you will be? Or, like, where does it rank for you in terms of
some of the other documentaries you've seen? I'm always hesitant to visit films like this because I know the effect they will have on me is going to be so provocative and tough. You watch any film about the fallout from any traumatic event, but especially wartime documentaries, Holocaust documentaries, things like Night and Fog or Shoah, who have very stylistic approaches to talking about these very, very difficult subjects. There are ways where documentarians present things in a very neutral light, leaving the viewer to really bring their own sort of closure to it, their own sort of interpretations, their own sort of feelings and thoughts. Like, you think of René's Night and Fog, it is very much a film made up solely of like static images, of these harrowing images of concentration camps and things like that. But then the approach, say, of Dear Zachary, which I know some people have issues with. I found it a very troubling and very upsetting documentary. And the reason that one worked so well for me was because the director was so personally invested in the story at the heart of Dear Zachary. And it even though the film itself is made up of very rudimentary techniques, it's very basic, it's video essay-ish, it feels very rustic, it feels very homegrown, and I think that adds to some of the trauma and some of the tragedy behind that. This one, it's really tough to think about, to ruminate on, just because of the shocking nature of the content here. It's hard to judge, but it's a film that should be judged, and everyone's going to take different things away from The Emperor's Naked Army Marches On, but I do think it's a vital film, regardless of what you think of the production, the etiquette, the way it actually undertakes these conversations. I think it is one to see, regardless.
Well put, Jack. I definitely am going to be thinking about this for a long time. I kind of, similar to Act of Killing, is this something I'm ever going to revisit?
That's what thing I'm thinking of. Like, probably not. It's an important part of history. It's an important story. You know, it's just important to know about these things culturally, and it helps you get a wider understanding of cultural developments, of post-war attitudes, of all these sort of things. This sort of humanistic drive throughout as well. But man, does it not make for a great Wednesday morning 9 a.m. watch like I did this morning.
Yeah, no, not at all. And it didn't make for a great afternoon watch for me either.
No, it's one of those.
And I will say this, there's plenty of films that I watch and I love them and I know I'll rewatch them. But sometimes it's like, if you were to ask me about them, I might get lost on some of the details or forget some things. Mm. This is a film I might never watch again, but I feel like I would be able to talk about all of it with someone, because it just won't, none of what I saw or heard will leave me. I mean,
that's the thing. It's so troubling, but the way that it is presented is memorable. It's captivating in the moment. There's that sparks fly, fists fly, you know, it's very memorable. It's something that you're never going to quite live without after seeing it. It's strange.
Yeah, I would say, for anyone listening, if you are a fan of bold, audacious, confrontational documentaries, then this is probably up there with, you know, it's up there as all of those things. If you're someone that really likes Japanese new wave films, which quite often are attacking establishment or authority, then I think you should watch this. They're not necessarily stylistically similar, but like,
no,
content wise they couldn't be more similar. Again, there's the Imamura connection,
politically charged, angry, matter of fact presentation here, runs alongside some of the Japanese new wave directors, not necessarily, as you say, in style or presentation, but thematic underlining and just sheer anger against authority figures.
Mm-hmm. And I will say, if you keep up with movies, if you're active on something like Twitter or Letterboxd, you might see a lot of people talk about this. And it wouldn't be often that I would be the kind of person to give like a content warning, but like, if you are someone that, you know, is maybe intimately connected with people that have experience in the military or war or this stuff, you know, this type of stuff will hit hard for you. This is as confrontational as it can get. And so if that's something that's off-putting to you, then I would be like, just read the Wikipedia page or, you know, read about the people involved, because at the end of the day, what's important here is like the story. It's important what happened to these two soldiers that died after the war had already ended. Not just died, they were killed.
But there's no fluff, there's no sensationalism, there's no fantasy here, there is no sort of cinematic presentation style. You know, this doesn't feel like a grandiose thing. It's not divided into digestible chunks, and it's not given like a thorough like narration or a narrative there. It's not loads of talking heads. It's very combative, it is very dissonant, it's angry. But it's so essential, I think.
I'm very happy that we covered this. I think for both of us, this was kind of a huge blind spot.
I think I've had this on maybe both, like, a couple of Japanery lists, and I always get around to it, and I'm like, I don't know if I'm ready yet. I don't know if I'm in the mood for it. It's always one of, like, I always see it on top documentary lists. I know it's what a big favorite of, like, Errol Morris, and very formative for some documentarians that I enjoy. But yeah, the subject matter always deterred me from checking it out. And again, watching it, it's difficult. It's difficult to watch.
Yeah, I think there's so much to gain here, but, you know, just make sure you're ready when you go into it.
You go ahead. I was gonna say, you'll watch the film and you'll come away with different takeaways than us potentially, and the ethics and the morality around it may rub you in a different way. But to view this film is to listen to this man's story, listen to this man's pleas, and just be he shoves it in your face, basically, with all the grief and anger that he has felt of the fallout from post-World War II. And he doesn't sensationalize it, doesn't sugarcoat any of it. It is ruthless, it's raw.
Yep, and it's all of those things from the very first minute, too. Like, it gets right into it. So yeah, everyone, definitely everything you've heard about the Emperor's Naked Army Marches On, I would say is true. It is great. Mm-hmm. It's phenomenal. It's depressing. It's a lot. That's all I can say. It's a lot.
Yeah.
So
it's upsetting.
If you haven't seen it, if you have not seen it, hopefully Jack and I haven't put you off from it despite all of the warnings. It is very much worth your time. Just make sure you're in, like, a proper headspace.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
And with that being said, Jack and I will use this as a transitional point to say the next episode we will be talking about some Hong Kong action, I believe.
Yeah, let's slingshot
fun.
Back a bit. Last episode we had Igar, the Indian fly revenge movie. Now we've gone to post-war angry Japanese political documentaries, and we're going to slingshot back into something fun, something dramatic, something well staged and choreographed. Have we picked a film? I can't remember if we already chose a film, Ben.
So I think we had a discussion about the director Stephen Chow, who did Shaolin Soccer and Kung Fu Hustle. Although I don't think we've decided, and I'm very open to anything because you have such great knowledge and experience with Hong Kong cinema, although Stephen Chow is definitely a central figure. And I've always been somewhat surprised that I know you like his films. I'm always surprised you don't love them because they seem very Jack core.
I've only seen the two, I think. I've only seen Kung Fu Hustle and Shaolin Soccer, which are obviously his two most popular movies.
Right.
The cultural influence there is apparent. And, you know, that sort of hybrid of Kung Fu and Hong Kong action and humor. And, like, that sort of Cantonese humor is very interesting. Be interesting to either revisit one of those to check out something like The God of Cookery, or his take on Journey to the West, I think, was quite recent. Then there's things like Forbidden City Cop, which I've heard a lot about too. So haven't decided yet, but it'd be something Stephen Chow related. Maybe I'll watch a couple of films even, and just to get a general sense of the man, just to try something different there, but to take my mind off the post-war trauma of
the
Emperor's Naked Army.
Maybe us two can kind of start at the beginning of his career together, because he doesn't have a big filmography.
We can just pick
a film that sticks out to us and talk about it.
That'd be interesting.
He's an important figure in Hong Kong cinema.
I'd say my quote-unquote expertise sort of ends towards, like, the mid-80s, and Chow was definitely a director that started in the 90s and worked throughout the millennium and into the 2010s. So it's an interesting want to catch up on in a contemporary Hong Kong setting.
Well, hopefully, you know, we've been informative, and hopefully we don't look totally deranged by going from Iga to this to then going to Stephen Chow. But actually, I kind of hope we look a little bit deranged. I think that's kind of
fun. Yeah, you know, that's kind of the brand. You know, we're kind of interested in everything and anything. So I think that's what this podcast is going to cover. Shedding light on areas that we're interested in, areas that we're scared of, and all sorts in between as well.
All right.
So thank you for listening to this episode of Adventures Through Asian Cinema. You can get us on Twitter at Asian Cinema Pod. You can also email us at adventuresthroughasiancinema@gmail.com if you want to suggest films, countries, filmmakers, any sort of thing. Or if you want to just leave comments, queries about the episodes that we've done in the past, suggestions for the future, or just compliments in general, all are accepted and all are very much welcome. So you can follow Ben and I on Letterboxd, Twitter. It's all in the description of the podcast. Is that it for the day, Ben? Have you got anything else to say?
That's everything I can think
of. That's it. Cool. We'll catch you on the next episode for some Stephen Chow funny bone tickling madness, I assume. Catch you on the next episode.